at very high prices, making U.S. oil companies rich. And he says, that won't do for one province. Let's spread the good gravy across all 10 provinces. And Alberta's still mad about it. I don't understand it. Why didn't they get mad about this? Don't you think there's a disconnect between how they're still acting angry at Trudeau for doing something that we're failing to do now, making it pay for us instead of it going south? Same thing, isn't it?
Yep. Well, I think the national energy policy has been used as a whipping boy by politicians in Alberta for the last, 20, 25 years. And it's moved beyond, the state of having a sort of a realistic debate. It's mythic now, right? And anytime someone on the right of the political spectrum wants to score cheap shots, they trot it out. But as you said, in a lot of ways, the argument that's being made by people on the right about the NEP is the same argument about what's happening today. Back in the 70s, the argument was that Ottawa was plundering our natural resources and that Albertans should, stand up on their hind legs and oppose it. But, in a lot of ways, something very similar is happening in Alberta today. It may not be that the villain is in Ottawa and it's not someone, wearing a Liberal Party button on their lapel. But someone is taking advantage of, unfair advantage of Albertans right now. Someone is fleecing us, frankly, but instead of a politician, it happens to be people sitting in corporate boardrooms. And the extent of the fleecing is kind of mind-boggling. In fact, at the table during lunch, Ian and I were just talking about the historic profits that have been recorded by the major oil companies. And many of you have probably seen this in the newspapers recently. Just about a week ago, Exxon, which is the biggest oil company in the world, reported their corporate earnings for the United States, and I think it was $126 billion in profits in one year. $126 billion. It's more money than any corporation has made in a single year in the history of the world. And Exxon is the parent corporation for Imperial. Imperial is their Canadian branch. They made a profit of $3 billion last year. A similar profit was made by Shell Canada, by Suncor, by Syncrude. There are a lot of people, actually I shouldn't say a lot of people, there's a small group of people making a lot of money off the sale of our collectively owned resources. It's a scandal. If a finger should be pointed, it's an old saw in Alberta, point the finger at government, but this is a time that we should be pointing the finger, and it should be pointed squarely at corporate Canada and the sort of the oil oligarchy.
They're stealing, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Are they stealing it? There's no doubt that we have to spend some money to get the oil out of the ground, okay? Oil doesn't just come out of the ground and refine itself. Obviously some money has to be spent, to get it out of the ground, to refine it, to get it to market. There's a reasonable role for business to play in providing that service. The problem is that I think things have gotten mixed up. And that instead of looking at oil companies as our higher hands, those people who we hire to do those jobs of pumping, digging, refining, and marketing, they've taken on the role of the owner of the resource. And that's the fundamental problem. And that's what Peter Lougheed was talking about when he stressed the need for us to start thinking like owners. As owners of the resource, yes, we're going to have to pay to get it developed. Yes, we're going to have to give some money to oil companies. But as owners, we should be determining, first who we hire, how they go about doing the job of exploiting the resource. And frankly, we should be, as the owner, we should be driving the hardest possible bargain for the sale of the resource that we own. That hasn't been happening.
Dwayne Pendergast, upgrading bitumen generates a lot of greenhouse gases. Do you think that we might be moving it to the U.S. to avoid Kyoto charges?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. It's a double-edged sword. I mean, here in Alberta, the resource that we happen to be sitting on is petroleum. And no matter how you, no matter what form it comes in, whether it's tar sands or conventional oil, exploiting that resource is always going to cause some pollution. And it's especially true with the oil sands. I mean, you just simply can't get that stuff out of the ground. You can't get it separated from the sand without expending a lot of energy. And and as I said during my presentation, if we continue down the road that we're going, we're already at the top in terms of Canadian jurisdiction when it comes to greenhouse gas production. We're gonna rocket into the stratosphere. And that's one of the reasons that why people like our Federation of Labour and people like Peter Lougheed, one of the reasons they're saying that we should more reasonably pace this development is not only because it's overheating the economy, but also because we have to do a better job of managing the environmental implications. And so if we proceed more slowly, we'll be in a better position to deal with the environmental fallout. And to tell you the truth, if we proceed more slowly, it will give us more time to take advantage of technologies that are developing, right? So for example, there's been a lot of talk about carbon sequestration, right? It's an emerging technology. I have friends at an organization called the Pembina Institute, which is an environmental lobby group here in Alberta. They came out with a study just about a month ago saying that with existing technologies, we could look forward to a oil sands industry that was actually carbon neutral. And it wouldn't actually cost a whole lot of money. They asked, depending on the scenario, they said, between $1.76 a barrel and $13 a barrel would cost us to make our industry carbon neutral. But the problem that I'm afraid of, because we're developing this stuff all at once, we're going to build all these plants all at once using old technology. And so we're going to get into this rut of building yesterday's plant when we should be moving slowly, which would allow us to build tomorrow's plant. The other thing I'll mention on greenhouse gases is that the world politically and in terms of regulation is changing. And if we start building old-style plants now, we may actually put ourselves at a competitive disadvantage in terms of accessing markets. And the one that I'll mention just as a specific example is California. Arnold Schwarzenegger was never my favorite movie star, and he hasn't been my favorite politician, but he's introduced probably the most far-reaching greenhouse gas emission regulations of anywhere, any jurisdiction in North America. Basically, he's saying that anyone who wants to sell gas in California has to meet, from the oil well to the gas pump, has to meet very stringent restrictions. And if we're not up, if our plants are old style, if we build them now with old technology, we may be shut out of the California market. And if America and other American jurisdictions follow California, as they often do on issues like this, we may be shut out of a whole bunch of markets. So this idea of building all these plants now may seem really dumb in about 10 years, when we spent billions of dollars on these old technology plants, and all of a sudden we can't get into our major market.
Hi, Gil. Tom Osborne. I was the national representative for. I was a national representative for QP back in 1975 when I first was sent into Fort McMurray to resolve a strike, and I continued in that vein up until about 15 years ago. And I haven't heard anything, Gil, that you said that I could contradict. I want to add a little piece of history that came across to my knowledge in Fort McMurray. And according to, I believe it's the U.S. State Department, they put an absolute blackout on this piece of knowledge that I intend to pass on to you. In 1942, when oil supplies and the Americans were under attack at Pearl Harbor, they decided that there were known oil reserves in Alberta. And they sent in a crew, I'm not sure of the designation, but I believe it was a battalion of heavy equipment operators who were drawn from Louisiana. The officers were white, as was the style in those days in the U.S., and they proceeded to find out how to handle this bitumen. Well, then the progress of the war took the priority away, and other available resources started falling back into the Allies' hands, and they dug, according to the information I have, and I did go out to look at the site of the camp, and there's definitely been something going on there years and years before 1975 when I went out there. There's cement, there's building sites. You can see that the bush has been disturbed. So they dug terrific holes, and they buried all their equipment up there because there wasn't any way that the road could take that equipment out of there, and they did the same thing on the Alaska Highway. So there was a little bit of supporting evidence to the stories I was told. So anyway, I'll give you that as history, because I've never seen any record anywhere, and I have read The Prize, which is a very informative history of the petrochemical industry, and as I say, I thought I would share that with you, that the Americans were into Fort McMurray in 1942.
My name is Van Christie. Thank you very much, Gil, for a presentation which I asked around our table, does anyone disagree with anything he said? And there was an absolute negative response. So you're obviously talking to a lot of converted people here. A lot of us have been very worried about this for a long time, the fact that our resources are being given away. I wonder if you wouldn't, for the benefit of our audience, give us an idea of the amount of money that's being charged for oil and the bitumen. You did give us the cent for a dollar for the bitumen, but for oil, in relation to the North Sea oil, Alaskan oil, and the other oil fields around the world, how much money are we getting, we Alberta people, in royalties compared with what oil companies are paying for the same oil, let's say in the North Sea? Can you give us those figures?
Well, in a nutshell, if you were to, you know, put Alberta's royalty rate on a spectrum and compare it to the rates that other jurisdictions are being paid for their oil resources, we would probably be at the bottom of the scale. It's a little bit difficult to make straight line comparisons because every oil resource comes at a different price. I mean, so for example, conventional oil is much cheaper to produce. So you know, it's arguably easier to extract more revenue for the public body, right? But I don't actually have the dollar figures in front of me, but I know for a fact that we here in Alberta collect less. Economists talk about economic rents, which is, you know, the share that goes back to the public for the sale of it for the collectively owned resource. And I know, like I said, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I know that as you know, compared to our rent on our resources in Alberta, we're paying about half of what we were getting under Peter Lougheed. Getting paid about half of what we were under Peter Lougheed, we're getting paid less than than the state government in Alaska. And we're also getting much less than other petroleum jurisdictions like Norway and even most Middle Eastern countries. The other thing that I'll say in relation to this question is that there are many different ways that that governments and public institutions can get their share of resources. And so they can do it either by charging a royalty, which we in the West is the sort of the preferred way that the people in North America, the jurisdictions in North America, get their share. But you could also do it by taking equity shares, becoming sort of partners in the development of the resource or full owners. And you know, in my presentation, when I talked about the big oil companies being hemmed in and only having access to about 20% of the existing petroleum reserves now, that's one of the things I was talking about. The vast majority of petroleum reserves that are out there right now are actually in countries where the oil is developed and exploited by nationally owned oil companies. That's the case in the Middle East, it's the case in Norway, it's the case in most of Latin America, so Mexico, Venezuela, the big petroleum producing countries down there. And it's really just Canada and Canada, the United States, and a handful of other places where these big oil companies are calling the shots. So, you know, and in fact, that's one of the things, it's almost taboo here in Alberta for us to talk about that other alternative. I mean, like, I think everyone in this room agrees that we should be getting a bigger piece of the pie. And when we say that, we say, well, we should boost the royalty rates. But maybe, in addition to, you know, having a more reasonable royalty rate, maybe we should actually talk about equity shares in the development of this resource. I use the phrase equity shares because I know that if there were some conservatives in the room, they'd be screaming about nationalization. And I guess that's what I'm talking about. But it's our resource, and in most other places of the world, in order to keep the money with the people, they decided to run their own companies. And maybe it's something we should consider here, at least for one or two projects.
Gail, thanks very much for your presentation. And you succeeded in making me mad. But you said you wanted us to join your little campaign. I want to know where the big campaign is. Where is the focus of dissatisfaction and dissent over this state of affairs? I mean, who do we join to cause a change?
That's a good question. We on the sort of progressive side of politics in Alberta have, on other issues, come together in coalition. So, for example, on Medicare, we've joined forces under the umbrella of Friends of Medicare. In fact, when I was here speaking to you last year, it was as not only the president of the Federation of Labor talking about the government's proposal about third way, it was also as a board member of Friends of Medicare. And that sort of provided us with a focus. This is an issue where that kind of coalition, at least hasn't yet developed. What I can tell you is that different groups are meeting right now to talk about these issues, because in the same way that everyone in this room has probably been to one extent or another thinking about these things, other organizations across the province have been talking and thinking about royalties, about, the gradual shift of Alberta to a pipeline economy, but as of yet we don't have sort of a central, sort of lobby organization. It's something that maybe we should consider doing. As it stands right now, the Federation of Labor, I'll be honest with you, I was getting a little frustrated that more of this stuff wasn't being talked about, and I said, okay, well, I can't force everyone to talk about it, but I can force people in my organization to talk about it. So, but it wasn't much of a stretch. I mean, the labor movement is very concerned about this stuff. So we're doing something. We've been meeting with the Parkland Institute, which I think most of you are familiar with. The Federation and the Parkland Institute are doing a joint research project on the implications of Alberta's energy policy or lack thereof. so you'll be seeing something from them soon. Groups like Public Interest Alberta, but you're right. What we need is sort of a clearinghouse for action, and you put the bug in my ear, so I'll see if maybe we can build a big tent, because on this issue, I mean, these issues are so important that that's exactly what we need right now.
If I may be permitted a second crack at this, I should have included this in my question. Gil, the word lobbying came up, and I really congratulate you on starting this crusade. I hope your crusade really takes off. But the thing that we've got to be aware of is that since Mr. Selmac was put in as the head of the Conservative Party in this province, don't think that all those oil businesses haven't done an extremely good job of lobbying with that man. That's going on every day. And they have the best mouthpieces in the world, psychologists, lawyers, and all the rest to do their job for them. And they're doing it effectively. And so that puts the onus even more on us, as you say, to get going and raise our voices, because by comparison, we're not even a squeak compared with the amount of pressure that those companies put on the politicians to see things their way. And that's the comment I wanted to make, and perhaps you can elaborate on that, Jeff.
Well, I don't think it's any secret that our provincial government is a business-friendly government, and not only that, it's a government that has long-standing and very deeply rooted ties with the energy industry. People used to make jokes about the government actually being run from the McDougal House in Calgary, as opposed to having things run out of the legislature in Edmonton. In fact, I was joking with people at the table that the only thing that Ralph Klein wasn't successful in doing as premier was convincing people to put the legislature up in blocks and take it down the highway. That's the reality. We have a government that is conservative by name, conservative by nature, and that sees its role as smoothing the way for industry in general, but the energy industry in particular. So for those of us who want to change their approach to energy policy, those of us who want to address issues, our concerns on things like royalties and concerns about piping jobs out of the province, I mean, it's a big hill to climb, there's no doubt. And I'll be honest with you, I don't put a lot of hope in lobbying. I mean, we will do it. We will go to the premier. He's the new guy in the block, and we'll give him a chance. We'll go to the premier. We'll go to the ministers. We will do as much as we can to make them hear noise. But at the end of the day, I think that what's going to be needed is frankly a change in government. that's not to say that lobbying in between elections isn't important. In fact, I think it's important for putting the issues that we're talking about on the agenda, forcing the government of the day to listen to it, and just as much, it's important to make the opposition parties, who may hopefully one day form government, take strong positions, sort of people-first positions on these issues, so that when they get their crack at running the province, which I hope is sooner rather than later, that they will actually have clearly defined positions on these issues, and that they'll be able to move quickly to introduce